This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Shall we begin?
Expecto Patronum!
Hey, it's your boy McEnroe again. This is Devi Vishwakuma. She's a 15-year-old Indian American girl from Sherman Oaks, California, and it's her first day of sophomore year. And I am legendary tennis player John McEnroe. Davey has what you might consider a short fuse, and sometimes she's a straight-up psycho, which I find pretty admirable. No! Paxton Hall Yoshida, the hottest guy at Sherman Oaks High. I know it's a little weird for me to be saying that, but come on, look at this kid's jawline.
It is 7:37. Hello, everyone. You are listening to Popcorn Culture with Lee Chui Lin, who is zooming in from home. And today we also have Sharmila Ganesan from home, Arvind Yuvaraj in the studio, and a special guest, Dashran Johan of BFM, of course, who is joining us. We're just adding and piling on different homes, different spaces people are calling in. Hello, everyone.
Hello.
We're all in like different multiverses. Every week we're in different multiverses.
It's like how many monkeys do you need to change a light bulb?
Yeah.
Four today. So today's show is going to be focused on the concept of divisiveness, right? This idea that there are some shows or movies that people just absolutely love and others hate. They are the Marmite of shows, the Vegemite of content. And it's always very, very difficult to say exactly why. And we actually played that little clip there of John McEnroe commentating on a 15-year-old girl's life, because that comes from Never Have I Ever, which is a series that was released, I think, a month ago now on Netflix. It is, of course, helmed by Mindy Kaling. And it is... Okay, so I will just start off by saying that half of us like it and half of us do not.
Yes, I think that's fair. Maybe the positive Pollies can go first.
Yeah, I think that's better.
Yeah,
let's start with like a positive Nellies. Note. Yeah.
Yeah. Dash?
I think you go for it.
Okay. So I like 70% of it. So I'm positive. I really enjoyed the show. It made me laugh. There were points where I teared up. There were points where I was a complete weeping mess. But there are also issues with it, which I think we will talk about later. But what I really liked about the show was everything about the high school. So the high school life, I think Mindy Kaling got Davey spot on. I think Davey is an excellent character. I think she really encapsulates not necessarily just what an Indian in America would be, like an Americanized Indian, but also maybe, you know, I think a lot of us could relate, you know, if you grew up in an urban, if you are English speaking, and we are also to a certain extent westernized and all that. I think Davey's character was spot on. Everything about her high school life, her relationship with her friends, I really enjoyed. I thought it was humorous. It was heartwarming. I really liked it.
Okay, I have a confession, and that is that I watched all 10 episodes, but I did not watch them in order. So when I came home one day, my family had already begun the series, so I started it from episode 4 onwards. And so because of that, I really enjoyed it. And then when I went back and you know, I got all the way to the end, I was filled in about who she was, why this was happening and all that. And so I got it and finished it and thought, okay, so we're doing this for the show, I should go back. And when I did, I understood the other two people on the show a bit better, because I think that the opening, say, 3 to 4 episodes, a little bit rough, not going to lie. I think that maybe it's not putting the show's best foot forward. And I think part of that also has to do with something that you said, Dash, which is this idea of American Indianness. And also, I think the burden of having to be a show done by Mindy Kaling, because that comes with a lot of expectations. And if you just watch it as a teenage show with pretty sharp comedy, with some nice performances, with some really heart-rending storytelling, I think on that level, it works. I would not want to comment on how it does in terms of representation, because there, I think it goes a little bit Captain Obvious, and that's the stuff that didn't work for me.
So I think because, you know, you mentioned Mindy Kaling, and I think she gets a free pass because it's a Mindy Kaling thing. I felt like a lot of people gave her a free pass for the representation bit without questioning what she was doing. For me, the show was sloppy when it came to the culture, when it came to the representation of the people. You know, I was kind of annoyed that Mindy Kaling tried to tell her story but contextualized it with the high school stuff and the teenage stuff. You know, the parents, like Davey's parents, sound like they came out of a Russell Peters joke or Russell Peters bit, which is fine if it's about parents from the 70s, but if it's Davey's parents, then they shouldn't be like that. So it's obviously Mindy Kaling putting herself in Davey's shoes, but it's not Mindy Kaling's time, it's not Mindy Kaling's decade. And, you know, the timelines just seemed like they were all over the place. And also there were these weird jabs going back to India itself, which felt like they picked up on tropes about India by learning about it from some documentary in the 70s or 80s. And, you know, nothing was updated. So there was a lot of sloppiness in the show that overpowered the positive stuff, which is the teenage drama and the some of the progressive stuff and themes that they touched on.
So I think going back to the theme that we started off with for the show, right, the question of why we thought this was divisive, and clearly, you know, we're pretty evenly divided here. I heard so much about the show, and I heard two sides of it. One was that, oh, it's so amazing to see a show that represents what it's like to be migrants from India living in America now. And then the other side of it was how wrong-footed the show got that idea of what it's like to be Indian migrants. And see, the thing is, for me, my issue with the show was pretty much, I think Ivan encapsulated a lot of it, in that I have cousins who live that life there. I have family that are Indian migrants from India who live in the States. These people don't seem like they're any particular versions of them. They seem like exactly what white people have been accused of doing in the past, taking bits and pieces from little things that you know about what it might mean to be India monolith, not India, a country that's literally a bunch of countries tied together. And then just putting that story up on a screen for the consumption of an audience that might not know or care what it means to have diversity. Again, I actually think that the high school part works really well. And I think that's almost to the detriment of the show, because she doesn't just keep making it about a high school girl who just happens to be Indian. I think that would have been cool. It would have been really fun. Instead, she tries to take on things like casteism and racism and arranged marriage, but then deals with it in that same brush, that very flippant, like, oh, haha, isn't it funny that someone got ostracized from their community? No, it actually really isn't. These are like pretty big issues. And I do say, though, that Lynn, you talked about that baggage, and I think that might be right, that we might be putting a lot of weight on the show for a show that might just actually be a sitcom. Unfortunately, it tries to be more than a sitcom, and I think that's the problem.
So I think that's one element that we should talk about, right? This idea of whether or not when it comes to a show that divides us or a movie that divides us, how much of it comes down to the actual content of the show and how much of it is hype and marketing? Because I think it's a pretty good mix of the two. In the case of Never Have I Ever, as well as some of the other things that we plan to talk about, because more often than not, you find yourselves drawn into something. And I think that promise is a problem when you're promised something and you think, oh, this is what it's going to be. Whereas for me, you guys had already told me you hated it, basically, a whole earful about it. And so I thought, all right, fine. I went in with incredibly low expectations. And I think I went in at a good spot, meaning at the spot where the show started to find its feet. And so for that reason, I still have a fondness for it that's prevailed till now. Dash, I think you were going to say something.
Yeah, I agree with what, despite me really, really liking the show, I have to agree with what Arvind and Sharmila said as well. You know, I have to piggyback off what they said. And I think a lot of why the high school stuff works really well is because it really comes from the perspective of Mindy Kaling, who is herself a very, very Americanized Indian. That is how she is. She probably was Devi when she was a teen. So that part I felt she got right. I felt it was authentic. I actually liked the dynamics between her, between Devi and her parents and all that. What I didn't like was when it tries to be more. And when a lot of times when it tries to be more, it shifts to the adult characters. And I think my biggest issue with the series, a lot of it boils down to this one character called Kamala. And I think her character, I do not understand at all. Just one small scene to, you know, just bring up everything that's wrong with her character. For example, she describes Indian movies. Kamala is from India. She came to America maybe over the past 3 to 4 years or so, maybe slightly longer to, you know, complete her tertiary education. But she's from India. She grew up in India. She's very familiar with the culture there. But yet she describes Indian movie as this sort of, oh, this sweeper fell in love with this princess and it was 7 hours long. It makes no sense.
Yeah, exactly. All. Yeah. Or yeah, there's this jab about how there's only one flavor of ice cream in India from a person who grew up there. It's like the kind of Tencent joke that would fly maybe like years ago, but makes no sense now.
It doesn't, because even if you look at it from the joke of the movies, the 7 hour movie, that's the kind of joke that a white person would make. That's the kind of joke you find on 9gag. So I always say, if Devi would have said that joke, it would have made more sense. And maybe Kamala, or, you know, one day Devi comes home and she sees Kamala watching a Tamil movie or a Hindi movie or whatever, and she sits down with Kamala and she just watches it and she was like, oh, I was wrong. I think that would have made more sense. Even if you want to poke fun of it, use the right characters to do it.
So basically, I think what we're talking about is a pretty uneven show. And that's why I think it's kind of easy to see the points at which you can kind of pick up and say, you know what, this is it. I'm not interested in engaging with this anymore. But some of the other movies and shows that we plan to talk about are straight up, I don't know, you know, some people would say that they're amazing. Others would say they're absolute trash. So this idea of what divides people, I think, is an interesting one. And we're going to get into it after this. But do let us know what your thoughts are. Have you ever loved something that other people hated or hated something that other people loved? That's the question today. You can WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899. You can, of course, call 7733-2900 or tweet us at BFM Radio. We're going to be right back on Popcorn Culture, BFM 89.9.
Beyond Frivolous Matters, BFM 89.9, The Business Station.
Vice Admiral, Commander Dameron, with our current fuel consumption, there's a very limited amount of time that we can stay out of range of those Star Destroyers.
Very kind of you to make me aware. Let's give me this.
And we need to shake them before we can find a new base, so what's our plan?
Our plan, Captain? Not Commander, right? Wasn't it Leia's last official act to demote you for your dreadnought plan, where we lost our entire bombing fleet?
Captain, Commander, you can call me whatever you like. I just want to know what's going on.
Of course you do. I understand. I've dealt with plenty of trigger-happy flyboys like you.
It is 7:51 in the evening. You're listening to Popcorn Culture with Lynn, Arvind, Sharmila, and today our special guest, Dash, who is joining us to talk about divisive films and shows. This idea that there are some things that are just the Vegemite of content. You either love it or you hate it, and other people feel equally strongly but opposite. And, you know, we just wanted to explore that feeling a little bit. And talk about flyboys and the like. So that was, of course, a little bit of... one of the most controversial Star Wars movies, I think it's fair to say, that's come out. And I think that can lead us down a couple of different paths. But before that, we do have some tweets that have come in.
Yeah, so this comes from Jack Fu, who says that the prequel to the movie in the post, and in the post we put a GIF up for Batman versus Superman, Dawn of Justice. And he said that the prequel to the movie in the post, and he hashtag Man of Steel. And then we have a tweet from Released the Snyder Cut, who says that the GIF he used there, which is Batman v Superman.
So clearly we picked the right GIF. Uh-huh.
Okay, fine. If that's the case, then I'm just going to pursue a thought that came up during the Star Wars clip, which was this idea of fandom and how that contributes to whether something is divisive or not. I think sometimes fans are, we are our own worst enemy in that maybe we build stuff up, maybe we're super committed to loving something even when it's not very good. And sometimes it's the other way around, where when you turn on something, you turn on it so intensely that you can't see any positives anymore. And I think that you do see that in a lot of the, shall we say, less critically acclaimed franchises that have come out.
So I'm glad you brought up fandom, because that was actually the main issue with The Last Jedi, right? That and you know, honestly, until I started talking to people whose opinions I respect, like Arvin, I thought that most of the people who had issues with The Last Jedi were essentially your bigoted trolley fanboy types who are just like, I don't want to see a girl do this. How dare Holdo beat down Poe Dameron, who's like the Han Solo stand-in, whatever. But I know that Iron, for instance, and I know other friends who have this opinion as well, they just feel that The Last Jedi doesn't do adequately what a Star Wars movie does. It's a great movie, but it's not a great Star Wars movie. I believe I'm quoting Iron from one of our previous shows. So for me, that's interesting, because Last Jedi for me is probably, if not the favorite, one of my top three favorite Star Wars films. So I find, and I consider myself a pretty big fan, so I find that interesting.
No, I mean, it's exactly that. I think I said this when we were doing our Star Wars show. I said that it's a good film. Like, it's one of the best films of the year, The Last Jedi of that year. But I don't think it's a good Star Wars movie. And it's also one of the best Star Wars movies ever made. And one of the best in Star Wars canon, but it shouldn't have been in this canon. So that is how I approach The Last Jedi. As a standalone, it works, but in the context of the trilogy that J.J. Abrams started from The Force Awakens, The Last Jedi tries to deviate way too much. It tries to do way too much on its own. It tries to exist as its own film, that it sort of ends up hurting the franchise in the process. And for that reason, I don't like it as the second part of the new trilogy. But if it was a standalone thing that I had to judge, I would say it's like close to, you know, Empire. It has to be like Empire Strikes Back, The Last Jedi, and maybe Rogue One in terms of like good Star Wars films. But, you know, then there are other things in the movie as well that didn't sit well for me. Like, you know, there was that whole part in the middle that didn't make sense. There were a lot of storylines that were thrown in there for the sake of having storylines and for the sake of being complicated, quote unquote, but they didn't have to be that complicated. At the end of the day, Star Wars doesn't have to be so convoluted. It's a very basic A to Z storyline, which again, this could have existed in its own timeline, in its own trilogy, but, you know, shoving it into a trilogy that is trying to conclude or trying to exist within the context of like 9 films, I feel that's where it sort of made its mistakes.
And I will have to disagree with you there, although I definitely see where you're coming from, because, I mean, full disclosure, Last Jedi is my absolute favorite Star Wars movie of all time. And I have gotten a lot of flack for it, like, understandably so, because a lot of people think that, you know, it's like what Sharmila said. Initially, that was what my impression was, you know. It's all these people who hate it, they are these trolls or these bigots who have very extreme opinions. It's either their way or the highway. But over time, I've started to see, the other side of why certain people don't really think it's a good Star Wars movie. But I do have to disagree, because I think, like, for example, Arvin used the word convoluted. I would say complex, because I love all the complexities of The Last Jedi. Everything from its themes, from how, you know, characters go on this whole subplot journey, only for it to literally amount to nothing. I actually like it, because to me, it like highlights the thematics of, you know, like failure, which to me is a very important part of Star Wars. I also think the film, more than J.J. Abrams, I feel this film was not just, you know, it doesn't just tie everything that happened in the original trilogy. It also tied everything that happened in the prequel trilogy. Because to me, the prequel trilogy, in an ineloquent way, was about the Jedi Order and their hubris and how, you know, the Jedis think that they are so great and they know everything. And The Last Jedi sort of deconstructed everything. So I actually loved all the subversions that Rian Johnson put, because to me, it wasn't just for shock value. To me, the subversions and the so-called plot twists, or the unexpected things that sort of happen, also informed character arc. It also helped to build like psychology and, you know, the everything that happened with Kylo Ren, for example, and his journey, where you thought it was going to, in Force Awakens, you thought it's just going to follow the template of the original trilogy, and how, to me, Rian Johnson took Star Wars, it broke the shackles that was holding it back and allowed the third movie, which didn't follow through, but allowed it to you know, go in fresh directions. I absolutely loved it.
So what I'm getting from this is, I think, what we knew going in anyway, which is that a lot of this has to do with deeply personal opinions, deeply personal experiences of films. And that comes down to, for example, when we're talking about Star Wars, what it is that we each want, right? Like, what do you want them to explore? And I do want to say, we do have to go to news pretty quick, but I did want to say, my biggest experiences when it comes to trying to understand how fandom functions in terms of divisiveness is in reading what Marvel kids have to say about DC kids and vice versa. And you know, when you do that, you really start to understand that quality is a truly subjective thing. And I'm just going to leave that there. I'm not going to say where I'm heading with that. But I have noticed that that's an intense thing. People, for example, just find every single logical flaw, pull it apart, and you think, yeah, but what about the entire film? And when I think about Last Jedi, that's exactly where we are. You know, did you appreciate it as a spectacle? Did it come together for you or not? And that's really what we're going to be exploring after this. We do have to hit to the news, I believe. But we're talking today about divisive, controversial movies or shows, things that other people love that you hate, vice versa. Let us know. You can WhatsApp 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio, call 7733-2900 to weigh in. You're listening to Popcorn Culture, BFM 89.9.
Brainy, fancy material. BFM 89.9.
Safe space.
People don't judge me and haters don't hate in my safe space.
Your safe space.
Bulletproof windows, troll safe doors, nothing but kindness in here.
You might call me a pussy, but I won't hear you in my safe space.
My safe space.
If you do not like me, you are not allowed in.
Look and you will see there's a very select crowd in your safe space.
BFM 89.9, it is 8:07. You're listening to Popcorn Culture with Lynn, Arvind Sharmila, and Dash. And today we are talking about divisive content, the stuff that some people love, some people hate, mostly in equal measure and equal ferocity. So we've covered Never Have I Ever, which is a new Netflix release. We've covered Star Wars and very briefly this idea of fandom and how that can contribute to whether or not something is loved or hated. And now we're entering the part of the show where we're just trolling. We're just going to be talking about the kinds of stuff that are actively made almost to be both loved and hated. And that includes South Park. You know, it also includes other things that we'll dive right into. But what do you guys think is the secret sauce for making something that is going to go right to the edge and have some people appreciate it and have some others go, no, you know, the line was crossed like 10 kilometers back?
I think you have to offend. Sorry, I think you have to offend some people to get to that line. I think like you honestly have to make some people get annoyed with you and get angry with you. But the things that you say have to make sense. And I think that's what I mean, South Park is the secret sauce. They discovered the secret sauce in the beginning. This thing like sort of built itself on controversy. It knew exactly what it was doing. It knew exactly what it was saying. And I'm honestly like I couldn't be happier that it exists, because without South Park, you wouldn't have things like Rick and Morty, you wouldn't have Family Guy, you wouldn't have all these weird shows that came out because of South Park's success, stuff like Robot Chicken. All of these shows say something that gets a certain community upset or annoyed or irritated, and that's how they brand themselves.
So I think I'm not a huge South Park fan, but I've over the years watched many episodes and I've always enjoyed them in small bursts. And I think what was interesting was that a friend of mine recently sort of made me watch a few episodes because he said, you know, you liberal lefty, I want to see if you get upset by watching them make fun of your kind. And the thing was, as I was watching it, I realized, no, I actually found it hugely amusing because I think we all recognize the edges of what we are, the extremes of what we believe. And I think that in a time like this, it is as important to realize that everyone is capable of descending into ridiculousness. And South Park doesn't take any prisoners. It doesn't take sides. It actually makes fun of Trump as much as it does, you know, what they call snowflakes. I don't necessarily agree. And it's all played for an equal laugh. And I think that's important, not taking sides and not making, what's the word? Not punching down is important.
Yeah, and I think that not punching down point is probably the best way to approach these, right? Because what's the difference between if you're talking about something that becomes, you know, rides the line, but yet is humorous, it can be divisive, but, you know, there's a certain, like, you know, if you look at it from through a critical lens or what, it really works compared to something that is just borderline, like, or really all the way offensive and all. And that's the key. I think it's about not punching down, which I think even like comedians like George Carlin and all have all said, yeah, stand-up comedians and all. It's you make fun from an unbiased kind of way. You have to make fun at both sides. You have to recognize your own flaws, or otherwise it just becomes a cringe, or you're going to, even if you look at it through a critical sense or anything, it's just going to be like you're bullying someone.
You have to punch sideways instead of punching down. I think that's what it is. You have to punch sideways and sort of be like self-deprecating to a certain extent. And South Park doesn't make any assumptions about itself. It knows it's like a crude show. It also it also proved the point that you can be crude and rude and offensive, but you that doesn't mean you don't have something to say. And I think that's why I like the show, because there's always a message. It's not like The Simpsons. It's not as tame as The Simpsons, but there's always a message in all of its episodes.
Yes, but I do want to make a point about quality. And I think that that's a difficult conversation, but I feel like we're circling it because it's the central thing, right? When you defend something, it's because you think it's great. When you hate something, generally speaking, you know, either you think it's offensive or you think that it's actively bad, whether it's poorly acted, poorly directed, poorly made. And South Park is poorly made. I mean, it isn't, but of course it kind of is, right? Like it's not, we're not talking about Pixar here. So it looks a certain way. And there, I think the quality shines in terms of writing. But I think at the same time, we've also seen other people try to engineer that in another way, where you might not have the writing on point, and instead what you try to do is imbue it with all the lens flares in the world, or, you know, all sorts of like shiny production value, maybe music. You try to basically, you know, glitter something up, but the central heart of it doesn't quite work. And I think this idea of quality is one that we probably need to dive into a little bit more.
I think that South Park is exactly what it sells itself to be. So it's not selling you Pixar. And therefore, it goes back to what you said earlier, Lynn, about expectations. You don't go into South Park not expecting it to be controversial, not expecting it to have that, you know, fourth grader who didn't have enough sleep drawing quality. You know, it's so then it doesn't disappoint you, and then you actually find yourself sort of pleasantly surprised at how much there is. So I do think that expectation has quality. Again, is subjective, right?
Yeah, and quality also, it brings up the point, jumping off what Lynn also mentioned, it's at the end of the day, if it is quality, subjectively speaking, if you like it, if you engage with it, then you are going to sort of ignore some of the flaws. Even like we were talking about Never Have I Ever earlier, you know, why it's divisive, even Last Jedi and all, is because we can sort of see the quality there and we can have a conversation around it. But it's like when Lynn brought up her example of, you know, how the writing is of a certain level, but you try to sparkle it up with visuals and all. The movie that I immediately came to my mind is the GIF that Arvin posted on Twitter, which is Batman v Superman. Yeah, which I feel
Martha.
Is, yeah, which I feel is a clinic in terms of how you would like to, you know, sort of in terms of visuals, how you want to like paint pictures that you would hang on your wall. But in terms of quality, when you peel back after the visuals, beyond the visuals, and you just look at the writing, I don't know what's there.
It's hollow.
And another.
Yeah.
It is. I'm sorry, guys, but it is. On a whole other level, something else that came up when we were kind of doing our pre-show chat and trying to talk about what it is that we plan to bring up, something else that came up was 13 Reasons Why. And I think that that captures a whole other end of the offensiveness spectrum and why people might find it maybe not offensive, but problematic. And in a way, Safe Space is the perfect song to soundtrack this discussion, because there is this whole idea of, should some things be talked about? And it goes all the way back to Never Have I Ever and casteism and arranged marriages and death and, you know, just the ways that people try to explore that in a show and whether or not you do it justice. I think that in and of itself puts the idea of expectation to a whole new level.
The should something be talked about, I think we get particularly, what's the word? Well, not we, the four of us, but we as society get particularly defensive or difficult about it when, and 13 Reasons Why is important when it's targeted at what we perceive as a younger, more impressionable group. And that's why 13 Reasons Why was so controversial, because it talks about suicide, but the accusation was that it almost normalizes it in some sense.
And, or glamorized it.
Or glamorizes it. And I think, was that show not a teenage skewed show, it wouldn't have attracted as much flack. But the fact that it was directly targeting teens and marketed to teens was the problem. So again, there's that idea of controversy being subjective depending on who the audience is and who it's being made for as well.
The controversy behind 13 Reasons Why is one of those issues that I can understand the most. Like when it comes to, you know, divisive shows and you know, fan bases and people hating on something, 13 Reasons is the one show that I can completely understand. I'm not taking sides, because I like the show and I think the show brought up a lot of important topics, and I think that it brought up a lot of important conversations that people had after it came out. I'm talking about season one. Season two and three didn't have to exist. But, you know, just about season one, it brought up a lot of conversation around the idea of suicide and what people were talking about, and it sort of shed light on the things that people didn't want to talk about on TV shows or on their entertainment or in the media. So I can understand it, but at the same time, I can also understand why the show had to exist, because if it didn't, then these topics wouldn't have come out in the first place.
And I'm just like Arvin, I really, really love the first season of 13 Reasons Why. Second season, I'm kind of okay. Third season, I just watched a couple of episodes and I tapped out. But it's, to me, 13 Reasons Why is a good example of what we're talking about, in the sense that it's not, to me, what are we allowed to talk about in terms of film and all that. To me, we personally, I feel we should be allowed to talk about whatever. But it's not about what, it's about how it's done. It's about how it's handled. It's about telling a story with characters. And I think, to me, 13 Reasons Why did a very good job with it, especially in season one. And I think a lot of the controversy that surrounds the show it also depends on people's opinion on how they perceive they're supposed to look at Hannah. So Hannah is the lead character who, this is not a spoiler because it happens in the first 1 second, she commits suicide. And what she does, her behavior, her characteristic and all that, a lot of people, their counter is to that is, oh, she's, you know, she loves to go to parties. She, you know, she's kind of easy, quote unquote. You know, she goes out with this guy and that guy and so on and so forth. So are we supposed to, you know, defend people like that? Are we supposed to defend this behavior? And a lot of people, that sort of also, you know, brought up this controversy of, are we supposed to, you know, are we supposed to follow her? Is she supposed to be someone we inspire to be? And I don't think that is the point of 13 Reasons Why at all. To me, 13 Reasons Why, it just shows you the reality of this high school. This high school girl, this lead character, is flawed. She can be sometimes annoying. And she can do things that, you know, your parents wouldn't be happy if you're doing. You know, things like that. But that doesn't mean that what she went through, you know, is justifiable. That doesn't mean that she deserved what she got. And I think that is the key. People, I feel like some people, not all, who don't like the show, maybe they're viewing it through the lens of, you know, I'm supposed to be like Hannah. I'm supposed to do what she does. When I feel that's not what the show is trying to say at all.
So we're talking today about divisive shows, shows that are loved or hated. Let us know whether you've ever loved something everyone else hated or hated something that everyone else loved. You can WhatsApp 018-789-8899. You can call 773-2900. And of course, tweet us at BFM Radio. You're listening to Popcorn Culture today, BFM 89.9.
Break from monotony, BFM 89.9.
We spend all our time here. I want to make a paradise.
She redid all of it. Every last detail. And she breathed life back into every room.
Are you happy?
I love you.
Please, come in. Hello.
Hello. A stranger. We're just gonna let him sleep in our house. Hello.
Hello.
Did you know he had a wife?
BFM 89.9, it's 8:23, and you are listening to Popcorn Culture with Lynn, Arvind, Sharmila, and Dash. And what you just heard there were all the lines of Jennifer Lawrence from Mother. So today we are talking about movies and shows that divide audiences and critics alike. The stuff that people love to hate, people hate to love. It's a whole thing. And we have been asking, before we just go right into the deep Darren Aronofsky, and we've been asking you for your watches, the things that you love or hate that fall into this category. And Arvind, what we got?
We have this tweet from Nidu Miza who says, Speed Racer 2008, the movie, which I love.
Ooh,
I know,
yes.
Yeah, and I know a lot of people didn't like that movie.
Zack Snyder again.
That was Wachowski's.
Yeah.
Matrix. Yeah. Yes.
Going full Wachowski.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yes.
And Leng says, I love Mac and Me. Can't understand why it did so badly. I have a few reasons why it did so badly.
Since you loved it, I shan't go into it.
I actually, you know what that prompted? Firstly, a memory of having watched it as a kid. And I don't think I loved or hated it. But that is the central thing for me, this idea of, sometimes the things you watch as a child, you know, going back to what we were talking about earlier, the stuff that's made for younger audiences or that younger audiences happen to watch, I think we are impressionable, maybe not in the sense that censors would like to think, but we're impressionable in that I've watched a lot of god-awful stuff as a kid that is embedded in my I love it category, even though I know objectively it's terrible. And a lot of Jim Carrey's early stuff falls deep, deep into this category. I was thinking, you know, when Ling said Mac and Me, about also things like Richie Rich, which people hate. And
oh, I
loved
Richie
it
Rich.
So much.
I know. I think we were that age.
Exactly. And a lot of it depends on when you watch it and whether it's the first time that you're seeing this sort of mansion and Macaulay Culkin and all the rest of it. And with Ace Ventura, I mean, that was it a hippo or a rhino? It looked really real. And that's the kind of and that's the kind of thing that as a kid, it just lodges in your brain and you're like, this is amazing. And it's hard to get out. So Ling, I don't know if that, you know, responds appropriately to your point, but I think that might be why sometimes when a 30-year-old watches it and a 13-year-old watches it, it's a totally different reaction.
No, I love that you said stuff that we watched as kids, because we spoke about The Last Dance yesterday. And if you go back and watch Space Jam, it's a really bad movie. Like,
it's awful.
It's an awful, awful movie. Like, he cannot act. Like, Michael Jordan is so... Caillou in that thing that he cannot emote like to save his life. But when I watched it as a kid, it was one of my favorite things. And I haven't seen it in maybe what, 10, 12, 15 years. I love that movie. And I remember it being one of the best things that I saw growing up.
Yeah. And, you know, speaking of that, right, certain movies when we watch as a kid, it really holds up. For example, Harry Potter and all that. But I had a similar experience. So a couple of years ago, I watched the first original Power Rangers movie after, I don't know, 15 years or something.
The one with Ivan Ooze.
Yes.
Yeah.
And in my head, it was the best movie I've ever watched. So I got so excited. I got my hands on it. I put it in. After 10 minutes, I was like, this is not what I remember the movie to be at all. I'm just going to stop it here and preserve my memory.
Oh, would that we were all so wise. I think sometimes just pretending that it is what you thought it was is the best way to go forward. Yeah. I thought Space Jam and Roger Rabbit were the same movie. I thought they were as good. And, you know, looking back now, I'm like, oh, I see.
We see.
I do think, though, that honestly, sometimes that train of thought can be extended to films like Mother, which you just played, right? Because I think sometimes watching a movie at a particular time, Darren Aronofsky is a good example. I actually love a lot of his stuff. I love Black Swan. I love Tree of Life. Tree of Life is Terrence Malick. I'm totally blanking on the one.
Requiem?
The Fountain. Yes, thank you. I love Requiem. No, I can't. But I rewatched Fountain recently and I found myself unable to sit through it. And I was just getting really impatient with his, like, oh my God, like sink into these visuals. And I'm just like, no, what is the story? Tell me the story, Darren Aronofsky. So I do think a lot of films require a certain headspace and a certain point in your life, maybe when I was feeling particularly introspective, which it doesn't hold up if you watch it in a different time.
Yeah, I don't think there's any point in time when I like Mother as a good movie. I like it as an experience. Like, I like it as something that I saw in the theater because it was different and unique and I didn't know what was going on. So as an experience in the cinema, it was fine. But it was also like watching a really pretentious film or film school student who was trying to be like avant-garde for no reason. And I don't know why Darren Aronofsky had to flex that much, because he is famous in Hollywood. He has, street cred, quote unquote, and he doesn't have to do these movies to prove himself, but then he made Mother and I still can't figure it out. And I don't think he's made anything since, which explains a lot. But you know,
he also made Noah. Can I just say that he also made Noah. So we shouldn't forget that Darren Aronofsky is capable of greatness and also capable of Noah.
Of Noah, yeah.
Well,
yeah.
Well, as a guy who likes Mother, well, okay,
go for it.
Yeah, I think, but I also have to agree with Arvin that, okay, I loved, not loved, love is a strong word. I liked the movie. I liked the experience. It definitely made me think. And even from an emotional perspective, it really worked for me, the characters and all that. Although towards the third act, it sort of gets repetitive. But that aside, I agree with everything Arvin said in terms of why did that Darren Aronofsky sort of flexing his, you know, that pretentiousness and all that. Because after watching the movie, I went and watched a lot of the interviews and then I started to not stand the movie, although I like it still. But how he was trying to overly explain everything, he was sort of carrying this flag, trying to parade that he has made the masterpiece of all masterpieces, and it really wasn't. So
like
even
Jared Leto talking about his Joker.
Yes,
exactly.
It was
that.
Exactly that. Yeah.
And that brings us full circle back to the point we made at the start about marketing. Sometimes sometimes the makers or just whoever it is who decides to market movies and shows do the absolute worst job. Because I remember that Aronofsky media circus, and it was awful. You know, it really makes you think, what is up with this guy? But having said that, I watched Mother with somebody who really hated it, and being put in the position of having to defend it made me like it more, which is a surprising formula for liking a divisive movie. This is how you can get there, by having to stand for a movie that you're kind of ambivalent about.
You reverse psycho yourself.
Yeah, I'm always that person with a lot of these kind of offbeat art house slash indie. You know, Charlie Kaufman, for instance, I love anything Charlie Kaufman writes and does. But I have to admit, things like Adaptation or Anomalisa or, you know, even Being John Malkovich are quite difficult sells. And they may not be divisive to that extent, but they are movies that, by and large, you're stuck in that position of saying, oh, I loved it so much. But then when you explain it, they're just looking at you with this, like, why did you say you liked it again? Mm-hmm. Look on their face.
Can I just bring up a parallel that only just occurred to me, which is to Park Chan-wook? Because when I was thinking about difficult, artsy, maybe slow, sometimes fast, you know, the movies where the pacing can sometimes, time is very elastic, Darren Aronofsky falls into this category. If you watch Requiem for a Dream, which I can't recommend wholeheartedly because it's so disturbing, but if you do watch Requiem for a Dream, you see him do this to great effect, the same with Black Swan. Mm. And he also explores difficult themes. Like Mother is just, there's so much in there. And then you think about someone like Park Chan-wook, who is, of course, you know, Old Boy, as well as Stoker. And Stoker is the one that comes to mind because it's an isolated family living in a creepy house with creepy people wandering around. And is there murder? Maybe there is. And when I compare the two films, I don't know why Darren Aronofsky's Mother annoys me and Park Chan-wook's Stoker does not. It's a difficult one to pass. I'm not exactly sure why. And I don't know whether it's pretentiousness, but you could make that argument either way.
Maybe because one has story and the other doesn't. Like, I'm just thinking that one movie moves, like has momentum in a certain direction and the other doesn't. Because the analogies in Mother are all over the place. And after a certain point, you're like, we get it, but can we move on to like what is happening? And when you say art house, the house that Mother takes place in is literally that. It's an art house. It's a house full of metaphors and analogies, and it never ends. So that's the thing about these movies. It's like how far do you want to take it, you know, in terms of, you know, this artistic value or how artistic genius do you want to be about it? Like, do you make a movie that no one can understand, or do you make a movie that people try to understand because it has layers and subliminal messaging and it has something underneath the surface? Or is everything buried underneath the surface like Mother?
I think that's a good thing you bring up. And I think, you know, do you make a movie that everybody can understand, or how complex should you make? I think the important thing is to make a movie that is genuine and earnest. And maybe that can sort of answer, you know, what Lynn brought up earlier, which is why do we get, you know, slightly annoyed or very annoyed at Mother and not at all when it comes to even Park Chan-wook's lesser films? Maybe because Park Chan-wook doesn't feel like he's trying too hard. You know, he always feels that, you know, the raw, whether even if it's very raw, even if it's very graphic, even if it's very thought-provoking, everything feels like it's within the DNA of the director. It just feels like something that comes to him naturally. Whereas Mother, although I liked it, to me, especially when it comes to the second and third act of the film, it's like Arvind said, you get it, so what next? What, once you already get the metaphor after 45 minutes or an hour, so what else are you trying to say?
It goes on for another hour and a half. Everybody's very pleased. Yeah. okay, so I think we should probably just finish off the show on what we haven't actually talked about, what ours are. What are the divisive things that you know other people have not enjoyed, but you just really loved and you're not sure why? Do you guys, who wants to go first?
I'm gonna go with, I actually don't know whether people hated this movie or not, mostly because I think most people found it difficult to watch, which is Tree of Life. I accidentally said it earlier because I love Terrence Malick. I actually love everything he's done, including The New World, which is the Pocahontas movie that five people watched. But I love it, and I think he's a beautiful filmmaker who And I'm glad Dash talked about genuineness or sincerity, because I think that's what works in his films. There's a lot of heart and a lot of emotion in what he's trying to do. And all of the disjointed storytelling and the beautiful cinematography and the characterization that changes and you're supposed to just pass things together, all of that comes from a place of genuinely loving the story he's trying to tell. At least that's what I think. There are many people who can't stand a frame of what he does.
Where do I start? So we posted a GIF of Batman v Superman. I think I don't like Batman v Superman, but I actually like Justice League. I've been very open.
This is the point at which I questioned my friendship with you, I remember.
So when, you know, all this stuff about, you know, the Zack Snyder cut and you know, being announced, I actually liked the initial movie. I didn't have, it's a bad movie. I'm going to admit it's not a good movie, but I enjoyed it for what it was. I also liked The Rise of Skywalker. I know a lot of people don't like that movie, but I immensely enjoyed that movie. And just like bad movies from years and years ago, stuff like Van Helsing. I could watch Van Helsing like any day of the week and enjoy
it. Cosine. Yes. I enjoy Van Helsing.
I love Van
Helsing.
Not sure
why.
I shouldn't, but enjoy it.
I think for me, I've never gotten into it. As much argument with people as Last Jedi. I think Last Jedi has to, you know, take the cake. But, you know, just thinking about it, certain Christopher Nolan films, like Interstellar, is kind of divisive. I like it a lot.
I love it.
Okay, yeah. I think it even hits all the emotional marks. But probably another thing that, you know, there was a lot of argument and I happen to fall on the positive side is the 8th season of Game of Thrones. I genuinely love it.
I love it.
Yeah, I recognize its flaws. Especially how rushed it is and yada yada yada, the last three episodes. But I genuinely love it. I still love it. It still hit all the right emotional marks. And I think the characters still got to where they needed to be, even if it took a couple of shortcuts.
My favorite is How I Met Your Mother. Just kidding, guys. I am kidding. I am kidding.
Who are you?
I wasn't sure how long to pause and then I got scared. So, no. But, you know, hearing Game of Thrones reminded me that we're actually going to be doing a show very, very soon, which looks at the idea of how shows land the plane, because it's so important. Shows are often remembered by how they ended. Everything else before it doesn't matter. And so in light of that, Arvind's been going on about Lost quite a bit. And yes. So I will say that until now, I find the final season of Lost completely neutral. And I think that in and of itself is a divisive opinion to have on something that was so controversial at the time. But that's where I land. And so I wasn't going to say it, but yeah, that's mine. Lost, weirdly, as a show, had so many ups and downs. But on the final season, I'm fine. And I think maybe fine is an okay place to be when we're talking about things that people either love or hate. So that's where I'm ending. Let us know what yours have been. What are the things that you've loved or hated that other people have felt completely opposite about? You can WhatsApp us 018-789-8899. Tweet us at BFM Radio. If you want to reach us when we're not here in different rooms talking to you, you can find us at BFM Popcorn. We are on both Twitter and Instagram. And of course, write to us at movies@bfm.my. Dash, thank you so much for joining us.
It was my pleasure. So much fun.
You've been listening today to Popcorn Culture, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.